Hello and welcome to Media Futures. I'll have a double espresso to have with me newspaper, please.
Okay, take a seat, I'll bring it over.
Thanks. I'm Mark Coles and you join me here in my local cafe, the place where I like to come to read my beloved daily newspaper. This is the first programme in a new series that the BBC has asked me to make about the future of our established media, radio, television and print. Why me? Well, I'm not sure, really. Though, being a regular presenter here at the BBC, I do have a vested interest in what happens. Then again, so do we all. If you care about society, democracy even, if you want to be informed, entertained, or empowered to add your own voice, then the future of media matters to you.
The amount of credibility that the physical paper gets, the internet and television do not get.
Well, the biggest shift overall has been the transition to digital, and that remains one of the biggest struggles that the industry is facing.
We need to translate our content from one medium, which was print, into multiple devices and be global.
The algorithms behind this are slowly kind of starting to shape your worldview, and you're not seeing important information, and you're not aware that you're not seeing it.
Over the next 4 weeks, I'm going to be examining just what's going on with our established media around the world, the new trends, the pressures TV, radio and print industries are now facing, the compromises and the stark decisions that have to be made. I'll also be seeking the opinions of leading experts, asking what they think it all means as we catapult ourselves into a more connected future. The internet looms large, of course. It's shaping much of what we do, as we'll see today when we explore the world of newspapers. Another day's news being digested in the heart of Delhi as the journalists of the Dainik Jagran newspaper consider the latest stories from India and overseas. What's being discussed at this editorial meeting will be big news indeed, because Dainik Jagran has a fair claim to be the most widely read newspaper in the world.
My name is Sanjay Gupta and I am the editor and CEO of Jagran Prakashan Limited. Dainik Jagran was founded by my grandfather in 1942. Since then, it has come a long way. Today, it does about 3.6 million copies every day with a readership of 16 million who have read it yesterday and an average issue readership of 55 million readers. That takes us to become the world's largest read newspaper. The scale of the operation you can sense by the fact that today we have as many as 29 or 30 print centers, a staff force of nearly 9,000 people, full-timers, approximately 4,000 odd journalists working for us. And today our title is available in 11 states, nearly covering more than half of India.
Gupta puts Dainik Jagran's success down to its editorial policy of propagating Indian values and following a right-of-center political agenda. But what's so unusual about the paper, and many others in India, is that they are still newspapers. Jagran's online readership remains small, and its owners are quite happy about that. In fact, they say the printed word carries more weight than its electronic equivalent, and they think the readership agrees.
The strength of print in India is or the physical paper, the amount of credibility that the physical paper gets, the internet and television do not get. In television, you can change your news any way you want, and then after half an hour, you may change your views. Whereas in print, you have to be very thoughtful on what you write because you come out once a day and it's all documented.
I'm Anshuman Tiwari, Chief of National Bureau with Dainik Jagran. See, the most mesmerizing part of a printing industry is the huge machines. You'll see the towering machines of 3-4 floors. You can smell the ink here. You can feel the sound of a printing press, which is thriving in India and thriving in Jagran, which is the largest newspaper. This is a huge, long process. A lot of people involved into every step of that. People get the content, design it, put it into the computers, and then it comes to the production line, where it comes to a specialized plate used for the printing facilities. Plate comes to the huge machines, they press ink to the machine, paper gets rolled into that. You'll see huge mammoth size of paper rolls are coming, and then the different plates and the sections where they get printed content onto that. Then finally it comes out, get packaged in different bundles and then loaded into the trucks and distributed into the morning.
Oh. Before dawn, the distribution centres get going. Tons of newspapers have to be unloaded and laboriously transported to their readership. So why is such a labour-intensive medium still thriving in the digital age? Well, one reason is that the internet in India hasn't yet achieved the same penetration as some other places. Another is growing wealth and literacy. But these aren't the whole story. Like any newspaper, Dainik Jagran fails to make money on its cover price alone. What matters is advertising.
Publishers lose on circulation and gain on advertising. And we also lose about approximately ₹4 on newsprint and printing cost, etc. And we make up that plus more through advertising.
Sanjay Gupta. And crucially, in India, unlike, for example, the West, print advertising remains viable.
Future of advertising in India is still good. It's robust compared to the Western model, which was essentially revolving around classifieds and retail advertising. Our dependence on classifieds was not there. And you'll appreciate that classifieds were the first to move out to the internet because of the ease of use. Whereas retail advertising continues to grow in India for the reason that there is no internet still in our cities which can be relied upon. So yes, print therefore becomes a more credible for marketeers to put in their advertising.
Thanks to newspapers like Dainik Jagran, global print newspaper circulation has climbed steadily in recent years. But it's now facing decline almost everywhere, because what's abundantly clear from the most developed media markets, such as the West, is that the internet has disrupted and devastated established media. Let's hear from Amy Mitchell of Pew Research Center's Project for Excellence in Journalism in Washington, D.C.
Well, the biggest shift overall over the last 10 years has been the transition to digital. And this hit the newspaper industry first because text was easier to digest and consume digitally than video and audio, at least initially. And so audiences went there with the news organizations. What didn't follow was economics and revenue. And so as newspapers found more of their audience in this realm, the vast majority of their revenue structure was still tied to their legacy product. And that remains one of the biggest struggles that the industry is facing.
Newspapers going digital is now routine in much of the world, especially the most developed countries. There's a long and illustrious roll call of such publications. But hang on a minute. What was it that Amy said?
What didn't follow was economics and revenue.
Making the digital realm pay for itself is a serious and ongoing battle. One solution is to have a paywall or subscription. So far, though, only a few papers have made a success of this. Mainly, though not exclusively, those with unique or time-sensitive content that you can't find elsewhere online for free. But many others are caught between a legacy product that's increasingly expensive to produce, thanks to the decline in advertising revenue, and an online offer that remains hard to monetize. So what might the newspaper of the future look like? Well, it might look and sound something like this.
Welcome to the Guardian Audio Edition, our selection of the week's best longer articles from the newspaper and online. Coming up.
Fury at corporate tax avoidance.
The Guardian newspaper here in the UK is boldly pushing a so-called digital-first strategy. It's a good example of how online news all over the world is pioneering new ways of raising money.
My name's David Pemstall, I'm the Chief Commercial Officer of The Guardian. In 1995, The Guardian fully embraced the digital opportunity while clearly managing a drop in print circulation, 800 journalists serving content across multiple platforms. We're very clear that we need to translate our content from one medium, which was print, into multiple devices and be global. We've made our content totally free and accessible within those environments. And the strength of our audience suggests we are going in the right direction.
Well, back here in my local cafe, if I ditch the newspaper and borrow the wife's tablet or smartphone instead, with a couple of clicks, I can go direct to The Guardian's website. What I get is a page crammed full of headlines, articles and features. On the screen in front of me, there are blogs, videos, pictures, you name it. There's a commentary-free section too, inviting me to add my voice to each and every story. In an age where you can get news everywhere, comment and opinion, especially that of your readers, becomes that much more important.
When you think about the way in which digital works, it is collaborative. It is social, it is shared, it is not as it was once where you had your readership and you essentially told them the facts and figures of the day. Now it's a two-way conversation.
If that's true, it suggests the role of the newspaper may be changing. No longer a seemingly incontrovertible record of events, a reflection of the news, but more of a crucible for many different versions of the truth. Perhaps we won't look to our news providers for the same kind of certainty as we have in the past. Not only that, the Guardian's webpage with all this content and its endless, sometimes impossible to read, citizens' journalism is entirely free to access, whereas the print edition of the paper, which they still make, costs a whopping £1.40, almost $3. So, what's going on? Here's Amy again.
You now have a generation that grew up never paying. And so it's a struggle to convince these people that there is a reason to pay. And this, again, is something that the organizations are trying to work into the product that they're offering, which is come be a part of our circle. Come be a part of our family, where you feel like you're a part of this, able to converse with other people who are members. So trying to give this idea that it's more than just the news story.
If we started to create paywalls and containment, we essentially cut off all of that social engagement. We cut off the two-way dialogue that we so much want with our readers, and we cut off that global reach. So we want to grow our audience, we want to deepen the relationship, and then we need to be able to turn that deepened relationship into a known relationship.
Which is important, because journalism has always relied on outside sources of revenue. And as advertising has now declined, what we used to call newspapers now have to know their readers and viewers and listeners in order to sell things to them.
It's really important for The Guardian and for any publication to know the people that it represents. If we don't know who our audience are and the sort of interest that they have, then this isn't going to work.
Welcome back to part two of building websites. So it's great to see you.
My name is Matt Andrews. I work at The Guardian as a web developer and was approached to teach a Guardian masterclass at the end of last year. The masterclasses are a chance for us to bring Guardian readers into the building and kind of impart some knowledge into them. And my class is called Building Websites.
And Sally, how did you find it?
Masterclasses is a very typical example of what it means to have a strong brand. If we have a brand that is connected to a very progressive audience, it's not a huge leap to then start doing a program of educational seminars of things that sit within the content that we write. So if that's about culture, if it's about film, if it's about how to write a blog, how to set up a Twitter account, how to become a social media entrepreneur, all of those things are natural extensions of the content that we write.
It's £400 for the course, which is a month long, and it's 4 3-hour sessions. So it's definitely got a lot of potential.
You know, we have 50 people turning up to a masterclass. Sometimes we have 200 people turning up to a masterclass. And the enthusiasm that sits in that room is a very rich environment. And we believe it's something that we can roll out globally.
So this is quite a lot of CSS, and it's quite a lot of advanced CSS.
The experimentation side has begun, clearly. And in some cases, it's revenue that's not really tied to the news they're producing at all, but is another area that they've developed, whether it's helping people build their websites or a shopping channel that you have on your site, but other ways that you can get the revenue to support the news product.
Amy Mitchell of Pew Research Center. Those print advertisers who moved online are now being replaced by masterclasses, reader offers, online dating, anything that you can sell to a community of like-minded readers drawn to your news content.
I saw the advert on the Guardian website. It's a good-looking website, it's well put together, and I thought, well, if you're going to learn HTML from somebody, then learn HTML from somebody who really cares about it, so grand, here I am.
I like the idea of meeting people who have a slightly artistic slant. So yes, it's meeting like-minded people and doing it in an environment which feels friendly and welcoming.
Readers of The Guardian are people centered perhaps a little bit to the left, so there's already a shaped community, I guess.
One of the big questions is, will they be able to get that revenue to not only sustain perhaps what they have, which is in many cases a skeletal version of what used to exist, but to get them to a point where they are able to provide the level of reporting and content that their readers had relied on them for?
Yes. We have millions of people sitting in the database of whom we know an awful lot about content they consume the things they like, the things they don't like. We have a very, very big reader offers business whereby we're selling travel, we're selling financial products. Even with Soulmates, the reason why Guardian Soulmates works as a dating platform is because people want to meet people like them under the halo of what the Guardian stands for. And, you know, we do very well out of that. But as we start to scale that internationally, we become even more excited about the possible prize.
For now, the Guardian's operations make a considerable loss. But like many others, they're playing a long game with their so-called digital-first strategy, aiming to move beyond the pavements of their own countries and onto the screens of the world. The future for big newspapers is surely global. Others might make themselves unique through being hyper-local. In the middle, many are likely to be squeezed hard, especially in big media markets like the United States.
The evidence would suggest that we are going to see a winnowing of news producers in our country, frankly, as people have access to news from all over. You know, the number of Americans that can now get news from the BBC, from The Guardian, you know, that's going up and up and up and up. So there are likely to be certain news organizations that are not going to be able to sustain themselves because the content that they produce is not unique or special enough to create a brand around and enough of an audience.
So, is there any other way to monetize online newspaper content that might give the others a chance? Well, what might increasingly come to the rescue is the computer itself.
At Demand, we're all about data, and we have a listening platform where we're able to really understand what people are looking for.
This is Dan Bryan of Demand Media, owners of eHow, which isn't a newspaper at all, rather a website offering advice on how to do things. But it might provide a blueprint for the online newspaper of the future.
Yeah, so this is an example of one of our experts. Her name is Carly Nabla. So Carly is amazing. She's got a great personality. She's got a great sort of on-camera presence. And she's explaining in this video how to use Skype.
Make sure you click this if you want to be seen, or turn it off if you don't.
eHow and Demand Media's other sites are what's called content farms, and they cleverly reverse the normal publishing process.
Traditional publishing, it's typically more of an art. An editor saying, you know what, I bet the world could use a movie about zombies. And I bet the 18 to 34-year-old demo could really use a movie about vampires. We've taken a different approach. What we do is we listen. And listening means go to all the most popular places on the internet where we know people with intent go and demonstrate that intent. So billions of people go to the Google search box or the Yahoo search box, and they type in their query. That person is showing some form of intent there. And with that intent, we then understand that is there a place on the internet that provides a good answer to that question already? And is there some kind of an advertiser that's willing to support that piece of content if we were to create it? And so what we call our algorithm, very complex set of rules and data crunching, tells us what content to create because we know that there's a need for it and an economic viable return for it out in the market.
The algorithm now looms large over news providers too.
Although Demand Media or eHow or some of our sites don't cover news per se, there are companies out there that are looking for data and what's trending instead of it being a room full of editors coming up with what they think people want. The proof is in the data and how users are acting.
Algorithms choosing which stories to write is one thing. Meanwhile, at the other end of the spectrum, so-called hyper-personalization is making its presence felt, examining the reader's news preferences and selecting existing stories accordingly. One such site is News 360, which was invented by a Russian computer expert.
My name is Roman Karachinsky, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of News 360. We try to learn what you're interested in, what you like to read, and then once we understand what you're interested in, we provide a single feed that tries to get you stories from all the different interests that you're kind of looking for. And the goal is to basically have a feed where 90% of the stories are relevant to you instead of the 10% that you usually see when you're looking at your Facebook feed or Twitter feed or just reading sources that you know.
The future could be a battle between serendipity, finding interesting things you weren't expecting to find, and relevance, as determined by an algorithm. And since algorithms are much cheaper than editors, they might well end up on top, along with targeted advertising that the algorithm knows you're interested in.
We call it the reverse search metaphor. Instead of you searching for content, we want content to find you. Your phone should know what you're looking for and serve it to you kind of proactively.
That certainly speaks to this larger question of the bubble effect, if you will, of how much individuals are staying inside their own little bubble in terms of the way they see life, the way they view issues. In our surveys, we ask people about the kind of news they want. Again and again and again, people tell us, I want news that is unbiased. I want news that is straightforward. I don't necessarily want my own way of seeing things. But the question is that what they end up choosing?
I think the question is, are you consciously putting yourself into this bubble? If you're doing it as a conscious decision, I would say that, you know, that's your choice. I think the problem and the fear is when it's happening, not because of a conscious choice that you made, but because the algorithms behind this are slowly kind of starting to shape your worldview, and you're not seeing, you know, important information, and you're not aware that you're not seeing it.
Roman's sure that the dangers of losing serendipity can be minimized. His site even tries to give readers the odd unsolicited story just to stretch their imagination. And Amy Mitchell of Pew acknowledges too that as we're increasingly liberated from the desktop computer, we are becoming more open to a wider range of material. Pew's research suggests that tablet users, for instance, are more engaged and spend longer on stories than those using web browsers.
If you think about the desktop era, there was very much this seek and find. I want to just get this piece of information, I'm going to grab it and I'm going to run it, and I'm not so worried about where it came from. And now consumers seem to be coming back to certain forms of long-form reading. That news that is going to come at me and I wasn't necessarily looking for, but say, oh, that's interesting, I'm going to take the time to read that article. And that does offer some new potential for the industry as we look forward.
It all makes the old printed newspaper look a bit old hat. So is there any future in buying a print edition? Well, some people still find time for it, even among the futuristic readers of The Guardian's e-editions.
I read the Saturday Guardian as a paper, and the rest of the week I read it online. I've got more time on a Saturday, cuddling up on a settee with a cup of tea and my newspaper. I like looking at big pictures. I like the feel of having a newspaper. I like turning pages. I like reading an article, going over it again. I have a different reading habit when I read online.
In a sense, it's back to the future. All that free access, algorithmically chosen content and hyper-personalization is only doing what traditional newspapers have always tried to do, finding the most compelling stories to keep our attention for as long as possible, and then advertising around them, albeit in a very clever way. Journalism alone has never paid its way, so it's always had to make its appeal as wide as possible in order to sell things to us one way or another. In fact, back in Delhi, Dainik Jagran's most popular element in print turns out to be a hyper-local pull-out section, geared to be, you've guessed it, more relevant.
We typically change a sub-edition for every 50 kilometres of our footprint area. So I would be saying about 150, 160 odd sub-editions which we are printing. And for every 50 kilometers in India, the dialect changes. So for every sub-edition, you have a different dialect, a different tone. That is immensely incredible, because when you're talking to the people every day in the morning, you have to have the pulse deep down.
Dainik Jagran's head of marketing, Deepak Pandey, and he believes that in India, at least, print can rival online for relevancy.
Indian newspaper industry is booming, and it's continued to boom for good 25, 30 years. I don't see newspaper industry going down for next 2.5, 3 decades, any which way. What is happening in the West, it's a learning for us. It's still a very long way to go before we get across the technology to get information and news in the real time. And at the end of the day, it is the feel of the paper in the morning, which Indians love the most.
India is a particular market. The consumer, particularly there, is moving at a pace. So for every incremental increase in print, that is only going to one day translate itself into digital at some point. And so it's all to come.
David Pemsel of The Guardian.
They should make hay, but it's going to go tablet. Broadband penetration there is only going to grow. And once that broadband penetration grows, it's going to leap into mobile, probably even jumping over tablet. And suddenly you've got to think about that very differently.
For better or worse, the internet, algorithms and all, are part of the future of newspapers. In fact, that future is now. It's already happening. So, what have we learnt in this programme? Well, making predictions is, of course, fraught with dangers. But it seems increasingly clear that the big newspaper publishers, having spent years becoming excellent at just one thing, will now need to diversify. It's likely that many will move even beyond news itself, effectively becoming online shops for goods and services, using news to attract a coherent customer base that can easily be profiled and sold to. What's more, newspapers will be increasingly interactive. They won't just be giving content to their audience, they'll be receiving it too. And so the paper of the future will know its audience intimately. Meanwhile, big newspaper publishers are increasingly going global, or local. But will they still be newspapers? Probably less and less so. Next week, Media Futures turns to the medium we all know and love, the radio. Join me then.